Chicago, 2011. A cop is murdered. Police and prosecutors swear they have the trigger man. He swears he didn't do it. How far will each side go to prove they're right?
Like it's just one bombshell after another, you know, where you're like, what?
The story of a PlayStation, a brain-eating amoeba, and the relentless pursuit of justice. Off Duty, out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is The Rundown.
My grandmother wanted to be in show business, but because of her life and her times, it didn't happen. So when her children started having children, i.e. me and my cousins, grandma was like, oh no, somebody's going to do this show business thing.
This is tap dancer and educator Brill Barrett. He grew up in North Lawndale in Chicago. And as you might guess from how he talks about his grandma, he started tapping at a young age.
I would ride with my auntie. She would take us all because she had a car. My uncle, who was working in something in corporate America, like paid half my tuition, and then my other uncle, Chip. So it was a real family dynamic to get us and keep us involved in the arts.
Brill is a self-proclaimed taptivist. He founded an organization called Mad Rhythms that stands for Making a Difference Dancing. And he's the only Chicagoan to become one of this year's National Heritage Fellows with the National Endowment for the Arts. Now, not many tap dancers have won awards from the NEA, but at least one Chicago tap dancer did receive this award before Brill.
Reggio the Hoofa McLaughlin.
All right, the Hoofa. Or what do you think that means about the contributions that Chicagoans have made to the art form?
I think it means we're finally being recognized. Mm-hmm. Like, when I talk about the history of tap, I have no problems talking about the history of New York and its history in relationship to tap and the creation of the art form. But I think it's always been a part of Chicago's history.
Chicago's history. It's just so rich. It never ceases to amaze me. Now, to be honest, I don't think about tap dance a lot. I wonder if most people do. But Brill is such a gem because his work reminds us of how this type of percussive dance has woven its way through our culture and our history as Americans, and how it's still so relevant today. So let's start at the beginning with the history of tap.
Like a lot of things, tap started out our ancestors. They brought them rhythms across the waters to these shores with them. And all of the things that we did to express ourselves rhythmically, once we were in the situationship of slavery, those things were one by one taken away from us. Anything that was used for expression, especially communication, drums were taken away. Well, the language was the first thing. Like, that's the first thing. Y'all can't talk to each other. And keep in mind, I tell people all the time, you got to realize, even though most slaves, you know, the ports came West Africa, but slaves came from all over. So putting different tribes together, was a lot of that was done by design. Keep everybody separated, make sure they can't communicate with each other, make sure that the customs are different.
Yes.
And so that way we're more reliant on, you know, whatever's being handed to us. And so with all of that history, we were creating this art form without even knowing it, because just the necessity of wanting to still be creative, make music, you know, and African dance, especially a lot of West African dance traditions, which is specifically where tap is connected to. You look at a lot of those dances, you see the most similarities to tap in a lot of those dances. But also in a lot of those dances, there's a purpose behind each one. This is for the changing of the season. This is to usher the crops in. This is like each dance, there's a fertility dance. This is a whatever this ritual was. So all those dances had a purpose. And that didn't change when our ancestors came here. They just had to learn new creative and innovative ways to do it, where it was not always known what they were doing. All of these rhythms are just conducive to us, and they flow through us, and they always have. And that's what became tap dance. And so when I talk about that history, well, why is that not the story anybody tells? Why is that narrative told differently? Because just like anything in America, when you talk about, of course, mention Beyonce and country music, That's a whole conversation right now about the reclamation of country music, because it started out with us. It was ours, just like rock and roll, just like everything was a certain thing until white people started doing it, and then it becomes an American thing. Mm. And so tap followed that same trajectory. That was coon dancing, that was bucking, that was all the negative terminology that you could think of. And so when they started minstrel shows were literally white dancers in blackface pretending to imitate black dancers. So even the way a lot of white people got into tap was making fun of us doing wow. our thing. And this is their perception of us doing our thing. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's overcharacterized, it's satirized, it's whatever you want to put in there, but it's a stereotype. And then that stereotype becomes associated with the dance, but that's never what it was intended to be, mm-hmm. and that's never how the true practitioners of the art form practice it.
Mm-hmm. I'm hearing you say all of these kind of fun insider terms and sayings. I heard you say huffers, huffing uh-huh. it. Shedding wood, run me down a few of those sayings.
Our people are very experienced with turning narratives around and changing meanings. Hoofer, for example, is the term that all the creators, that generation of those people that created this art form, those are the hoofers, or some people say those are the gods. Those are the ones that if without them, this wouldn't be possible. But the term hoofing was not a positive term in the beginning. Mm. It was almost a dismissive term. Like if I studied classical ballet, but you out there hoofing around. Mm. Male slaves were called bucks. Buck dancing is what tap dance used to be called before it was called tap dance. So there's a lot of history even interwoven into the terminology that we use to this day that people don't realize. Tap the wood. I remember there was a meme going around and everybody I know sent it to me. It was like, I wonder if tap dancers walk into a room and say, yeah, I tap that. And it was funny. It was funny the first 5 to 10 times.
Yeah, yeah.
But after hunt, but it's because we do. We have a fascination with wood. Wood floors and tap dance, the thing that most dance use, which is marley. It's a floor covering that is built to absorb shock. Mm-hmm. Tap dancers hate it because sound is also shock. Mm-hmm. So that same floor that's conducive to everybody else destroys more than half of what we're trying to express ourselves with. So yeah, we love wood. You can start talking about different types of wood and tap dancers are in heaven. I love this, so I could talk all day long.
I know you could.
Well, let me.
I want to ask you about one of your mentors.
Okay.
Mr. Tap.
Uh-huh.
Irie King. Tell me about him. How did you first encounter him, and how did y'all start to build a relationship?
In the subways of Chicago.
All right.
We took the trains everywhere. The train was our limo to the city.
Got you.
And she used to pick me up from school, take me up there, do classes. And one day on the way back from school, there's a guy in the subway tap dancing. This is Mr. Taps. I'm looking at him. I'm amazed. And then at the end of his performance, people are putting money down. And now my eyes are buck wide. I'm like, oh, you can get money from doing this?
Yes.
Because right now I just love tap. It never dawned on me. Nobody has ever talked about it as a career. No one has ever said, you know, you can move in that direction and study this. And like, nobody has said that. Even Carlton Smith, who was the teacher, never talked about it as how he got into it or anything that led me to go, you know what, I could do this as a career and make money. But when I saw Mr. Taps do his thing, make his money, again, I told you I wasn't shy.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked up to a stranger. My mom was like, no, I don't know that, man. And so I just walked up and I said, hey, can I tap dance with you? And he said, yes. Mm. And that's when my education truly began into the art form because, one, I didn't know what improvisation was. Everything I had done up to there was choreography.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Taps was dancing, and he did different stuff to every song. So I thought he had a lot of choreography memorized.
Oh, wow.
And I said—
This is your frame of reference.
Right, right. Yeah. So I'm like, how many routines do you know? And he was like, I don't know any routines. And I'm like, what do you mean? So this is improvisation. I put the music on and I dance. And so, like I tell my students now that come from traditional studio environments, so once he allowed me to perform with him, every day after school, my mom would stop me there. I would have my tap shoes and I would perform with him. Well, all I knew was routines from the schools I had went to, Sammy Dyer, and then studying with at BBF with Carlton Smith. And so I would pull pieces of those routines out, try to do something, and then he said, okay, now do another one. Now do another one. And every now and then I would forget. And I said, well, let me just make it up until while I remember.
Yes.
But that making it up in between started to get longer and longer the more I did it. And so he introduced me to improvisation.
Just by quantity.
Keep doing it. Keep doing it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you do something and the audience responds. So this is also teaching me how to perform. Mm-hmm. So then, I'm going to do that again because I know when I did that, they reacted this way. So now I'm learning how to put a performance together. And Subway during rush hour, trains running every 2 minutes. So you have 2 minutes to get their attention, captivate them, and make them go in their pockets and give you some money. And then you got to do it all over again. And that was literally my boot camp into what it takes to be a performer, to hold an audience's attention, to be creative and do different things. All of that I learned with Mr. Taps. I tell people, when you don't know a lot about history, start with your own. Mm. Who was your teacher?
Yes.
Who was your teacher's teacher? And then go back from there. So the legacy of this art form is all created through these historical figures. And so what do I look like teaching everybody about those tap dancers from way back, but I don't teach them about my teacher?
Yeah.
And to me, that just creates a continuous stream of ownership and connection to the art form.
Yeah. So now you're in Mr. Tapp's shoes. You're an educator with Mad Rhythms.
Uh-huh.
You expose young people to this art just like he did. How do you approach your work with young people, having been in their shoes yourself as a youngin?
So that's a very good question. In a lot of different ways. First, I look at, I believe you're supposed to learn from your mistakes and you're supposed to learn from the mistakes of others, including your mentors. Sometimes we put people on such a pedestal that we stop looking at them as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, for example, the Nicholas Brothers, most dynamic tap dancers in history. One of the most famous dances they do from the film Stormy Weather is they jump over each other's head downstairs. Everybody loves this. Everybody knows it. Even people who don't know them and don't know tap. But neither one of them could walk when they got older because Hollywood made them dance on whatever. They weren't particular about the surfaces. I mean, they couldn't demand certain things. So for me, idolizing them and their impact, but I also want to walk when I'm older.
Oh, my goodness.
So we built sprung floors. We only perform on certain kinds of floors. And some people may say, oh, they're so picky. But that's the necessity of longevity because all the tap dancers I looked up to from generations before me, knee problems, leg problems, hip problems, replacement this, replacement that. So taking those things and bringing into my dancers grow up understanding the importance of a sprung or floating floor, the importance of the proper kind, the importance of stretching.
I watched a TED Talk.
Okay.
That you did. And you said that there's a difference between teaching young people to follow and teaching them to create.
To create, yeah.
And I wonder if you can talk more about that.
Yeah, and that jumps right into improvisation. Mm. So the whole reason I even started a school was because I was under this whole thing of, I had been tap dancing since I was 5 or 6 years old, but Mr. Taps introduced me to improv when I was like 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then I fell in love with it. And then I developed a different relationship with tap dance because now I could create with it. Mm. So now, in that same thing, when we teach, I make sure that all my students have a healthy understanding and connection to jazz because that's the history of tap, but they can improv to whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see it's different when they dance to this jazz standard or they put on, I don't know, the Migos. And blah, 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 whatever. And they hitting the rhythm that matches that with their feet. So, and I also, jazz was the hip hop of its time.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look historically, we're always dancing to something new and fresh.
Mm.
It's just that jazz has now gotten old and the generation that, you know, created to it is no longer really here. If you want to see the best improvisational tap dance, put a 5-year-old in tap shoes and say, do what you want. Mm. They go bananas.
Well, they haven't been programmed yet.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the most free dancing you'll ever see in your life. And so I said, now, so what if the entire time they're learning the art form, they're immediately able to turn around and create with it? And then, and it happens more with little boys than little girls. Little boys always think they made up something. Look, Mr. Barrett, look what I made up. And I'm like, okay, now let me show you this black and white footage from the 40s of these people doing the same thing you think you just made up. And then I tell them, it's not that you can't make up, but you don't understand the full foundation yet to know how to create.
I wonder, what are some of the misconceptions or narratives about tap dance that you end up having to work against?
All of them. No. So I didn't know black people tap danced. I hear that all the time. And I'm like, how? But again, when you think about it, Broadway, Hollywood, American history, black people not being in those spaces. So now all of that stuff becomes the records that move forward.
Wow.
To represent. So we fight that narrative on a daily just by existing as tap dancers. That tap came from equal parts African and equal parts Irish. But if you get into the history of the art form, even the timeline of that doesn't make sense, because our ancestors were here 100 years before the Irish folks came from Ireland, so we were already doing this thing when they got here. Mm. So yeah, that's one of those things narrative-wise. But then there's the stereotype, typical aspect of the minstrel shows, blackface, cooning, shucking and jiving, show them pearly whites, smile for the man. Like, these are all things that black people also wanted to get away from. And so with the civil rights movement, a lot of black people were really coming into their own. Like, my mom is a Black Panther, so she could tell you tap dancing was not something they looked kindly on because it was presented stereotypically. And so we're fighting that, like, understand that that was somebody's idea of what we did. And because they had the power to make that idea reality, that idea became the reality. Mm. And it is not. When Gregory Hines came out, he was my hero because he showed up in a movie. The movie Tap was, he showed up wearing some dress pants, a tank top, and had an earring. I was like, oh, now I see people that look like that.
Yes.
I don't see people in a top hat and tuxedo and tails with a cane. I don't see that. Representation is everything, so we try to make sure that the young kids coming up now see full representations of anybody they could encounter in life through tap dance. Mm-hmm.
Brill Barrett is a Chicago tap dancer, educator, historian, taptivist. Brill, this has been amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You had a great interviewer,
thank
too.
Thank you.
I like to talk, but when somebody gets it out of me, oh, man.
And that's it for today. Justin Bull, Sarah Stark, and I produce The Rundown. Ariel Van Cleve edits the show. Brendan Banaszak is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Louis Weeks. The Rundown is produced by WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening to the show. I'll talk to you tomorrow.